Have you ever fought with your spouse or partner about money? Today on 50 Fires, I asked my guests, Morgan and Gretchen Housel, that question. And I think you'll be surprised by their answer.
In 18 years, the one area that I legitimately cannot think of any instance where we've ever had even a serious disagreement, let alone a fight, is money.
That's coming up today on 50 Fires.
Blind Nil Audio.
Greetings, Carl here. I am really excited for you to hear today's episode because talking about money as a couple can be hard. It can be clumsy and it certainly can be sensitive, but it is so important because money plays such a huge role in our lives. Think of the most basic things like needs, things you need. You know, we need to pay the utility bill. We need a car to drive. Even those things can cause trouble. This is something I've been thinking about for 20 years. Why does something so basic, like just opening the American Express bill or paying your utility bill or purchasing a new car, all things that we need, why do those cause so much tension? How come a conversation about money can often feel like touching an electric fence that you didn't know was electric? I was really excited to explore that question with my friend Morgan Housel, and I took a chance. I asked if he would come on to 50 Fires to talk with me, but I wanted his wife Gretchen to join the conversation. I didn't think it would work, but they said yes. If you've spent any time in finance, you know Morgan as the New York Times best-selling author of The Psychology of Money and his new book, Same as Ever. So today you're going to hear my conversation with Morgan and Gretchen. And on the heels of the conversation I had a couple of episodes ago with my wife, Corey, I think you're going to find this incredibly insightful. In fact, our conversation went in so many great directions that I decided to split it into two episodes. So what you're about to hear is part one of my conversation with Gretchen and Morgan Housel. I'm Carl Richards, an author, artist, and certified financial planner. This is 50 Fires, a podcast about money and meaning. Gretchen, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, of course.
This is when all the dirty laundry is going to come out.
It took a lot of convincing to have my wife on. And she had, I think I had to sign a legal document that gave her like full edit power. So we just duplicated it for you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
So just out of curiosity, how did Morgan convince you to do this? Like, what did he say?
Maybe he said, I don't know, this is a crazy idea, but would you have any interest in going on this podcast with Carl Richards? And then he, you know, he buttered it up. He said, Carl's so great. He's easy to talk to. You get full veto rights, all that kind of stuff. So easy
is that
sell.
Like the number of people who I would agree to do it with is very small, but I knew you would not embarrass anyone. You're not going to heckle anyone. You're not going to railroad anyone into a corner. So it'll be good.
No. Yeah, it's amazing. I'm honored. Like the goal of this whole project is just to have more meaningful conversations about money and not the kind of things we think of when we think of money, like balance sheet or income statement conversations, but like, what does it really mean in our lives? So what if we start here? I'd love to ask a question that you have to answer individually and just one at a time. So no helping the other party. And I'd love to start, Gretchen, with you. Gretchen, what's important about money to you?
Being able to spend time together.
Yeah. So time, being able to spend time together. Tell me more about that. Like, what is that? Spending time together could mean different things to different people. Why is that important? Why is spending time together important?
Well, so we have two young children, 8 and 4, and this is the first school year where they're both in school full time. So, you know, 9 to 3. And so Morgan works from home and I am a stay at home mom. So when the kids are gone, we can spend time together. So our dog Lucy now gets regular walks every single day. And Morgan now gets a regular walk every single day because the kids are gone and, you know, our kids don't like to go for a 90-minute walk. But if they're out of the house, then we can do what we want. So that's what the what money has brought Morgan and I is time together.
Yeah. Lucy, the golden retriever, right?
You got it.
I remember, I think I got pictures of Lucy, the puppy.
She was so cute. Was.
Carl, this is true. We got Lucy the day that you and I hiked in Utah. We picked her up later that day.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I remember that. So Gretchen, we're not done though. What, like, let's pretend like you have the time.
Yes.
You know, let's pretend like you're at that goal, and we could, if we were having a longer conversation, we could put some parameters around that and call it a goal.
Yeah.
Let's pretend like you've reached that. What's important about being there?
I don't know. Can you help me? Can I phone a friend?
I think we'll allow this. Normally, I would not allow this, but given that you asked so nicely, it seems like it's fine.
So Gretchen and I have been together for, is this year 18? I think it is. So pretty much our entire adult lives, we've been together. We met when we were basically, you know, I think Gretchen was 20, I was 21, something like that. So we've become adults together. And we've grown, you know, in many ways together, but including financially. And when we met, we were students. I was a valet. We didn't have that much money. And what's always been important to us since the day that we've met each other is just like, and of course, this is cliche. Everyone would say this, like, can we spend time together? But why I say that is because even though as our income has grown, as we have grown, as we've become adults and parents, that hasn't changed whatsoever. But also as we become parents, and our time is more stretched than it used to be. Like, we used to joke, every parent can relate to this, of like Saturday morning, we would sleep until 10 o'clock and then have brunch and go for a walk and then come home and take a nap. That's what we did before kids. And now, of course, like every other parent, like, forget about it. Like, every minute is scheduled. So in any area in which we can use flexibility in our lives just to spend more time together, like, boom, that's the only thing that matters. And as our income has grown, does a bigger house make us happier? No, not really. Does like nicer vacations make us happier? Like, maybe at the margins. Better clothes? No. Yeah. Spending time together? Oh, yes. 1,000% yes. It's so clear that that's what it is. And yeah. I think most people, if they think about money, it's like, well, what does money buy? And they immediately jump to like material things. So like, that's what I can buy, which is great. I've always thought, like, I spend frivolously on independence. I blow huge sums of money on autonomy. I waste buckets of money on controlling my schedule. That's what I view it as, like, I spend money on that. And nothing else has a bigger ROI than spending my money on spending time with my family.
Yeah. Yeah. Super good. Gretchen, have you seen that as the money has, you know, has income, of course, since, you know, college days, income has grown. Have you seen your ability to, like, what's been challenging about your ability to not move the goalposts, right? To not change, not to lose track of what was important.
So how do we get the goalposts to stop moving?
Yeah. Yeah. Morgan's had plenty to say about the goalposts not moving. I'm curious about the challenges. I've been impressed. Like, the conversations I've had with Morgan, I remember when we first talked about goalposts. And I had the thought that I often have, which is, Oh, that's cute. Like, that's cute. We'll see. Yeah. But you've done a really good job of staying committed to the things that are important. And I'm curious about the struggles around that. Like, has that been hard?
Well, our goalpost has moved a little bit.
Yeah.
And I've kind of elbowed Morgan and saying that, like, you know, our goalpost has moved. And he said, yes, but it hasn't moved as much as our income has.
Sure.
So that's why it's okay.
We were doing this just a couple of weeks ago. We were looking at our credit card statements from like 5 years ago, just for fun. Just like, oh, that's like, right. It's kind of like a little time capsule.
Scrapbook.
Let's look at that little scrapbook. Yeah. And we were like, God, you don't, only 5 years ago, our monthly credit card bill averaged X dollars, X being way less than we spend now. And I think in our heads, we're like, oh, we live the same lifestyle.
We eat the same food. We wear the same clothes. We think our goalpost hasn't changed until you actually look at the data.
Look at the data. Like, yeah, we've spent quite a bit more. But that's during a period in which now we have two kids that eat food, waste food, need new clothes, need this and that. Every parent can relate to that. But I also think, like, during a period in which our income has gone up, we have spent more, which is great. It should. I don't want to live a life in which the goalpost does not move at all. Because I think that's when you are like handcuffing yourself And you're like, you're becoming a, like almost a prisoner to an ideology of like, I don't spend more money. That's, you're just like, okay, well, if you could be happier spending more, would you? Like, we should do that then. To me, what's important is just like that the goalpost doesn't move as far as the income grows. As long as you're living within your means, below your means, and you can save, everything's great. That's great. I'm sure you've—
Hey, it's Carl. You know, it might be helpful to talk a little bit about this goalpost idea that's being tossed around here. There's a heuristic or a shortcut or a mental model that we humans often fall prey to when it comes to our money. And it's referred to as the hedonic treadmill. And what it's referencing is there's a thing that we're just positive that will make us happy. And then we get used to it really fast. The best example I know of is a new car. Right? You remember the first time you bought a new car and you sat in it and you could smell the new car smell. And then like 2 or 3 weeks or maybe 2 or 3 months later, it was just normal. That's the hedonic treadmill. And one shortcut we use for that is often talking about like the goalposts. If you say, look, if I just get there to the goal line, right down where the goalposts are, if I just get there, I will have made it. I will be happy, or that will be enough. And what inevitably happens is we get there and we realize that's not enough. And we move the goalposts. We say, okay, I will be happy when I get there. So that's what we're referencing here, is that the goalposts, most of us just keep moving the goal line. We keep moving the target because we end up not being happy. Well, the reason is we get used to new experiences pretty quick, given the hedonic treadmill. And so what Morgan and Gretchen are saying here, and the reason I brought up the question, is relative to the change in income that they've had, they have not really leveled up their lifestyles a whole bunch. Of course it's moved up, but it hasn't moved up a whole bunch. So that's what the reference to goalposts means.
That's great. I'm sure you've seen this book, read this book, Die with Zero by Bill Perkins.
Yeah.
That's like a very good book. It's kind of a little bit of an extreme view, but I do think after the financial crisis, after 2008, it became very fashionable to be like, we don't spend any money. We're like FIRE movement. We're minimalist. We don't spend anything. And I think that was an overreaction to 2008. And it's gone. Like it probably at the highest level went too far in that direction. And I think Gretchen and I attached to that. We met in 2006. So 2008, we were still like a very young couple. We got married in 2012. So at the time that we merged our finances, the whole world, like our generation was still like, it's really cool to spend no money. That was a cool thing. And I think we really attached to that. It didn't feel like we were like stressing ourselves. We bought whatever we wanted, but it was cool to be like, we don't want anything.
It was fun.
It was fun. Yeah. It was honestly seemed like a game.
Oh, you mean fun to not spend?
Yeah. It was like a game. I mean, we used to do things of like, it like literally be a game of like, how little can we spend this month? And it was fun.
Yeah.
And I think we could do it because what we really enjoyed was like going kayaking together, going hiking together, going for a walk together. That's what gave us the most joy. And we lived a great life. We had an awesome apartment in Bellevue. Like we were not, you know, depriving ourselves of anything. But I think that mentality of was a reaction to 2008. And once the economy improved, once our careers improved, once we had kids especially, it was like, look, I don't want to play no spend January. How little can we spend if it's going to come at the expense of like, my daughter wants this toy or like my son needs new clothes. Like then, okay, that's a dumb game at that point. So we've definitely loosened up a lot, but in a way that I think looking back, I think I was actually, okay, that's a dumb game at that point. So we've definitely loosened up a lot, but in a way that I think looking back, I think I was actually proud the other week when I saw that we spend so much more money now than we did 5 years ago. Because it shows that like we're not beholden to an ideology, that we're using money as a tool, not as like a religion to worship.
Yeah. No, and when I say goalpost move, I don't mean I mean in a relative basis, right? Like of course the goalposts have moved a bit, but they haven't moved as dramatically as they certainly could have. Because it's so easy to spend way beyond and get distracted. I call it the success porn, right? Like just get distracted by stuff, everybody waving their hands about shiny new objects. How have you kept clear? This is sort of returning back to that same question, Gretchen. Like, how have you kept clear about what's important and not been distracted by these other things to the degree that you've been able to?
Well, COVID is another defining moment of our family life. And during COVID, I started gardening. And that really is something that, of course, you can buy plants, but a lot of gardening is stuff that money can't buy. You can't buy how, you know, quickly your plants grow, how well your roses bloom, the ideas that, you know, for a new patio here, like those are all free ideas and I couldn't buy them. So it's, yeah, it was a perfect hobby to take my mind off of the Gucci bags that I could be buying now, right? It's like, no, I would rather go to a nursery or I go to this place called Rock Mountain and I buy big boulders and big pots and that sort of thing. And, you know, they're $150, not $10,000. Right. But it was a hobby that I could dedicate my mind to as opposed to other consumer goods. And it, yeah, like I said, it's just something that money can't buy.
There have also been times when both Gretchen and I have been like, almost in an experimental way of like, let's buy the really fancy thing. Let's go to the really fancy restaurant. Let's get the really fancy clothes. Let's buy the really fancy jewelry. Just as almost like an experiment, like maybe it would make us happier. Let's try. And with rare exceptions, it hasn't. And that's not a criticism of other people who might like those things, but you really like everything is so, it's so personal. The Tim Maurer quote that I accidentally attributed to you, personal finance is more personal than it is finance. It's like,
yeah.
So I think we've experimented a lot over the years and that's important. I think the people who never experiment never might not know whether like maybe the fancy restaurant would make you happy and you should do it. You should like, if you, until you try it, you really like, you really have no idea. So we've done a lot of experimenting, but now that we're getting older, I think you just settle on just like my, what makes me happy is like sitting on the couch, reading a book. And what makes Gretchen happy is being out in the dirt, moving rocks around in the garden. That's, and it's like, that's what, like, cool. Like, let's just do that. And I think it just so happens to be that neither of those things really cost that much money. But if we had expensive hobbies, I don't.
Hey, it's Carl. I can't help myself because this idea of running intentional experiments is so good. It's one of the things I hope you take away from this episode because I know I have. My wife, Corey, and I are running an intentional experiment. Think about something that you think will make you happy. Find the smallest version of it, do it, and see what happens. It's so good. I hope that's as helpful to you as it was to me.
You know, I grew up skiing, which is not a cheap sport. And now my son, who's 8, is getting into it. He and I just went to Tahoe last week to ski together. And that's something like if you thought skiing was expensive 20 years ago, it's, if you haven't seen it recently, it's completely absurd.
Get
now.
Out of here.
But that's another thing of just like, don't blink about it. Like, don't like, you're just like, you're never going to regret, you know, a trip with your 8-year-old son to go skiing.
Yeah.
And I bring this up because I feel like, again, less so than it was 10 years ago, but there are a lot of people who have plenty of money. They're big savers. But in their identity is like, I'm a saver. I don't spend money. Spending money is for people who don't know how to manage money. And they're depriving themselves of something that would make them happy. But I feel like Gretchen and I have pretty much never done that in 18 years. We've bought everything that we would want to buy. It's just that I think naturally we don't want that much, I guess.
I think it's not necessarily a natural innate characteristic of Morgan and I. I think our environment is such that we are products of our environment. Like I said, Morgan works from home. I work from home also. We don't have a lot of incentive to wear the shiny shoes and the cashmere sweaters because we're only looking at each other or our kids on a daily basis. And the Seattle culture, specifically like the Seattle suburbs, it's just not a place where people care about what you're wearing or the car you're driving. It's just, we're all dedicated to our kids and getting through the day. Yeah. And I just think that if we went to an office every day where we were trying to impress clients or something, that like we might think differently and spend differently. I mean, I know that we would think differently and spend differently.
We laugh at this thing. And part of this is just because we were young and trying to figure out who we were. But when we lived in LA, I had Dolce & Gabbana sunglasses, Gretchen had a Louis Vuitton purse. And just, and it's kind of funny because it's not, it's like the opposite of who we are. We're now like,
right.
We're now in the Seattle suburbs as elder millennial parents.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's, yeah, it's a product of your environment.
That was my actually experiments. Did you know you were running those? Like you said, let's run an experiment. Like, let's go try this thing. Were you as intentional as you just laid out about this idea of experimenting on spending?
There's been a couple times that were intentional. The ones that come to mind, I think I've done this twice, is renting cars. And almost anytime you rent a car, they have a Porsche or a BMW or something in the back that you can rent. And I've done this twice of being like, one time I was in LA and I rented a Porsche. And it was like, and I used to be a valet, so I've driven every car, but I am a car guy. I love cars. And so sometimes I get an itch of like, should we go buy a Porsche? Like maybe it'd make me happier. And every time I rent it, within 100 yards of getting out of the garage at the rental place, I'm like, nah, not worth it. It's beautiful. I respect this car. I admire this car, but it's not what I want. But I think it's good to experiment with that. If I went out and bought a $100,000 Porsche and then drove off the lot and been like, what did I just do? This is so dumb.
Yeah.
So I think those experiments, but sometimes I also feel like it's not intentional. This is the wrong phrase, but like in a moment of weakness, I'll buy something really expensive, just being like, oh, this is great. I want to do it. And there's so many times, there've been times when Gretchen and I have like done that and then returned it the next day. Just be like, that's not what we want. I think it gets harder as you get older because you're more comfortable and set in your identity of like, this is who I am. And I feel like if we were to dramatically change our spending habits, it would feel like a midlife crisis. It probably would be a midlife crisis at this point.
Yeah. Gretchen, can you think of any of those experiments that yielded results you weren't expecting?
When you were talking about experiments, I thought you were talking about the experiments of not spending money. And that is something that was very much a conscious experiment. So when our son was younger and didn't have he wasn't as persuaded into buying all the new toys that YouTube was pushing. But you know, when he was 2, 3, 4 years old, every year after Christmas, I would feel completely overwhelmed. I'm sure this is a feeling that a lot of women feel. All of a sudden, your house is just filled with chaos, right? Wrapping paper, toys, clothes. It just feels like there's just an abundance that I just couldn't manage. And I'm just one of these people that kind of clutter stresses me out. And so for about, I think it was 3 years, from January 1st, for 100 days, I tried not to spend any money except for food, gas, and like a necessity, like, you know, we're going to the dentist and there's a copay kind of thing. But yeah, it was basically food and gas and like necessary repairs of life. But there was no spending on clothing, shoes, dining out. It was the time of our lives when we like the cashed in the gift cards that we had been storing in our wallets, just kind of cleared out the clutter. And I, like I said, I always felt this right after Christmas. And for 3 years I did. Yeah, no spend. And it was a lot of fun. I think I started new hobbies when I was doing the no spend. I repaired things that I didn't know that you could repair. I had shoes that were just so dirty and I would normally just go buy new shoes. And I was like, you know what? I can clean these up. And I did. And they were great. And I washed the shoelaces and they looked really like great shoes again. So I don't do that anymore just because it's really hard with 4 and 8 year old who are I feel like they're not entertained unless we go out and spend $20. Maybe that's an error on our parenting, but it was a really fun experiment to do. And we learned a lot about ourselves during it.
I think it's important too, that even if you have a big spending lifestyle, that you can prove to yourself that you're capable of not living like that. If you can't do an experiment like that, where you're saying for 1 week or for 4 weeks, I'm going to spend no money unless it's absolutely essential, food, gas kind of thing. If you can't do that, or if you try that and you're like, I'm bored out of my mind, I don't know what to do, my hand is shaking whenever I see my wallet. I think that's a problem. So I think doing it was like a good test for us of like, are we addicted to spending? Or are we using money as a tool? And like, hey, we're not going to use it as a tool this month. But even when we're not spending, we're perfectly happy. Because the truth is, virtually everybody at some point in their life will have an economic issue where their income falls. Maybe it falls a lot for a long time. Maybe it falls a little bit for a little time. But if you're the kind of person where it's like, you cannot scale back your lifestyle without it breaking you just emotionally, then that's a tough thing. And there's almost an analogy. When I used to work at the Motley Fool, they did this thing where every month, a random employee's name would be picked out of a hat. And right then and there, that employee had to leave. And they shut down your email account. And they said, you have to leave for, I think it was 2 weeks. And they said, here's a little stipend, go on a vacation, goodbye, like go enjoy yourself, have fun. Wow. The reason that they did that was because they wanted to test that no employee at the company was like absolutely vital. That there wasn't one employee and he was the only person who had the password to the system. And if he left, the whole company broke. They always wanted to test that. And it was good. It was just like, make sure that you don't have a single point of failure in the company. But I think that's almost an analogy for spending. It's just like, you need to test once in a while to see if you are addicted to the spending. And the only way to do that is like once in a while. And honestly, when we used to do that no spend January, never once did it feel like a burden or a sacrifice. It always felt like it was a fun thing.
And
like,
entertaining. Of course,
we don't do it anymore because we got kids and we spend a crazy amount on them now. But no, I look back at that fondly.
Yeah, it's funny. We had two versions of that. I think I wrote one of the columns. I used to call it the spending fast. And I was always struck by like how much I learned about myself when I would do a specific, like the Whole 30. I don't know if you remember the Whole 30, Dallas and Melissa Hartwig's book, where you went 30 days like on an elimination diet and then you'd slowly add stuff back in. Well, Dallas is a good friend of mine. And I remember talking, I was like, man, I've learned so much when I add back in whatever peanut butter or something. I didn't know. And I the same thing held true for me with spending. Was like I broke habits that I was like, oh, I didn't even know I was doing that.
Yeah.
And then the other version I really enjoyed was, forget the dollar amount, it was how few transactions could I have. Yeah. We used to play that game too, where we were like, we want to see the shortest credit card statement. You know, like the shortest, like if it only has two, but it doesn't really matter what that, I was like, just don't worry about the dollar amount. I mean, within reason, of course, but like it was mainly just about like how the action of spending.
We call them swipes here.
Yeah.
How many times did you swipe today? Yeah.
Exactly. And then the final version is this thing I call the spending practice, which is just every time you spend, noticing that you do it. And then maybe trying to align, ask a simple question, is this spending aligned with my values? You know, like we'll give you a pass on the utility bills. But like, other than that, can we just say like, is this spent? Oh, and then one final step would be, if it is aligned with my value, what's the value, right? This is time with my family, or this is a friendship, or this is loyalty to my church, or whatever it is.
So when we had no spend January, my birthday is January 20th. And so we'd still go out to dinner for that. Right. That's a good example of like, we didn't spend for 100 days, but he would take me out to dinner.
She didn't let me off the hook on that.
All these excuses.
It was my birthday.
So fun. We'll be right back with more from 50 Fires. Hey, it's Carl. You know what's hard for most of us? Talking money. That's what I'm talking about. Talking about money is hard for most of us, but there's somebody who it is not hard for. She's been doing it forever. Her name is Shauna Game. And if you've been enjoying the conversations I'm having here at 50 Fires, I think you would love what Shauna's got going on at her podcast. The podcast is called Everyone's Talking Money. And just like 50 Fires, Shauna's goal with Everyone's Talking Money is to go beyond the spreadsheets and the calculators and the budgeting apps to talk about how our emotional relationship with money impacts our lives. With over 900 episodes, that's right, 900, there is an episode for any and every practical money question you have. Some of Shauna's recent episodes include retirement risks to avoid and credit card versus debit card. Which one should I use? You're going to love it. Subscribe to Everyone's Talking Money on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome back to 50 Fires. Tell me about, like, Gretchen, I'm really curious from your perspective, first memory of money.
Oh, man. My dad was a small business owner. He sold heating oil. He delivered heating oil to people's houses, and then eventually it turned into a propane business. And my dad grew up with no money whatsoever, like was in foster care. He lived in low-income housing in Seattle. It was a point of pride to him that I didn't know a lot about money, I think. Mm. He just was like, oh, back to school shopping, like here. He'd say to my mom, like, take her back to school shopping. And just generally, there was no budget. It was just, she needs clothes to go to school. Or if I wanted to start snowboarding, it was like, all right, we'll go to the snowboarding store and get a snowboard and boots. And there was no budget about that. However, and this is getting into a therapy session, but I do remember.
I'm here for you, Gretchen.
My parents split up for a while when I was like in sixth, seventh grade. And all of a sudden, my mom's swiping, you know, our family budget became a topic of conversation, right? Because my dad was out of the house, and it was, how much are we allowed? Like, what is our budget for this month? Whereas previously there hadn't been a budget. We just kind of bought what we want, and we didn't spend extravagantly, but we had a good life. And I always go back to that because I remember what that budget was at the time.
How old were you?
Oh, like 6th or 7th grade, I think.
And when, give me an age, what would that be? 6th or 7th grade?
12, 13.
12.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you remember this became an actual conversation between you and your mom?
Yeah.
Were there siblings?
Yeah, I have two older siblings, but one of them was already out of the house. Yeah, I guess my other brother was. He was still at home, but he was just less involved in the conversation. But yeah, and when you say, like, what was my first money memory? Like, maybe I had a lemonade stand or something, but I don't really remember it. But that the when they were apart is something that sticks with me and how that impacted our family and my daily life.
Do you remember how that felt? Like those conversations, like what words would you describe how it felt?
Well, it's just interesting to quantify your life, and it's, you know, this is what it takes to run our household. And I didn't ever think about it. I just went to school and I did my homework and I did my dance classes and I had a cat and a dog and I played with my friends, and whenever I needed something, I just would buy it. So yeah, it was just interesting to quantify, I guess, my dad's contributions to our family.
Yeah.
Which is what money, why it's so interesting, because it is so quantifiable, right?
Yeah. Well, even that statement, yeah. Isn't that fascinating? Like,
yeah.
The contribution of, because this comes up a lot in life insurance conversations. You're like, you literally have to put a price tag on somebody, you know,
and
we have to cold hard truth have these conversations. And mm-hmm. What does it mean if the price tag on you is different than the price tag on Morgan? And,
right.
And it's so interesting when you get down to quantifying. I mean, do you remember feeling, was that stressful for you? Like, how would you describe, if you had to use words to describe it?
Yeah. I was just worried about being stressful for my mom.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I also felt like it was a point where I had to grow up a little bit, because before I just like lived in, you know, the darkness as to how our family operated. But she was kind of letting me in on how the sausage was made. And I was like, oh, all right. And the thing is that was so valuable. I mean, she, like, how we run our household is everything that she spent would go on a credit card. And is she pay it off every month? But I remember her telling me that as a 6th grader, which I didn't know what the credit card did or was or whatever, right? I didn't know what credit card debt or anything. But she explained to me that we, you know, everything that we ever spend, we generally put on the credit card, and then we pay it off every month. And it's important to pay it off every month. And this is how much the credit card bill is. This is what our budget is, that kind of thing. And wow. Yeah, I think just learning what a credit card is and how to use it appropriately in 6th grade, and not only learning how to use it, but like it was really important to know how to use it at that point. Because, yeah, there was tension in the family. We had to use it properly. Therapy.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just think it's really neat that you had, I mean, you said, I was going to ask you, are you glad? And you already answered the question. Like, it was really valuable.
Yeah.
Really valuable to have those lessons.
It was. Yeah. And like I said, because there was a lot of importance placed on it at that time.
Do you remember that period? Like, were you aware of what socioeconomic class you would have been in like, at school compared to the other kids at school?
I went to an all girls private Catholic school at the top of a hill.
With uniforms.
I went there 5th through 12th grade. So everybody that I went to school with had means. And it was, we didn't really talk about money. It was just something that existed. It's kind of like air. You don't talk about air, right? It's terrible to say about my classmates, but it's true. Like we didn't talk about it. I think we started talking about a little bit more about, you know, when we all got cars and we're 16 years old and like, oh, gas money. Do I have to pay you for gas money? Like, you're going to go pick me up and I live 20 minutes out, or like, and we exchange, you know, $5 bills here and there. And that was when money became more of a topic in our class. So yeah, that was I had a very unique situation in that regard when it comes to my classmates.
Yeah. It's really interesting. My daughter, when we were in New Zealand, she was in an all-girls school and wore uniforms. And she was just, now she's at Cal Poly, and she was just telling me how much she liked the uniform thing because of that. She's like, I loved that I just didn't have to think much about it.
Yeah, but you'd be surprised how much girls can still get the nice shoes.
Yeah, yeah, the stuff around the edges for sure.
Yes, yes, the stuff around the edges, the highlights in their hair or the eyeliner, you know. We can still flaunt some feathers.
For sure, for sure. Morgan, what was your earliest? I don't know that we've ever had this conversation. What's your earliest memory of money?
I don't know what it'd be about money. So for the first, I guess, 8 years of my life, my parents were very, very poor. They were both students. My dad was in med school. My mom was in nursing school. I think we were living off of a little bit of grants that you get when you're so poor that the school will give you some money to buy groceries and whatnot.
How did you know that?
I know that in hindsight.
Okay. So only in hindsight.
But what was important, like, I think a lot of people who grew up poor might say this. We didn't know it. I didn't know it. I was a perfectly happy 6-year-old. I thought my family was great. And I guess we lived in a town in which I didn't see other people living better than we did. So I thought it was great. There was no issue whatsoever. And then I guess when I was 9, my dad graduated med school, became a doctor. And then, so his income went up a lot since then. And that year, we bought a house. We went on a nice vacation. We bought a new car. We always talk about like that year, 1992. That was like the big year. But still, with the exception of the house, the car, and one vacation that year, I think the frugality that was like required of my parents when they were broke, which they had been for decades before that, just stuck with them. So even though my parents had a good upper middle class income for most of my later childhood, I feel like the words I heard more than anything were, we can't afford that. We can't afford that. We can't afford that. That's too expensive. And I think it just became ingrained in my parents that they are savers. And I think a lot of this was very responsible because my parents did not start making any money whatsoever until they were in their early 40s with 3 teenagers. And I think they knew they had ground to make up. If they wanted to retire at a reasonable age, they're like, we got to make up for lost time. So what they were doing was actually like extremely responsible. But I think it was also just so not in their blood to spend a lot of money. It just stuck with them. And it wasn't until I was probably a later teenager, 17 maybe, that I really understood how much my parents made. And my dad was an ER doctor, which is like one of the lowest paid of the doctors. This was not crazy money whatsoever. It was just comfortable middle class, upper middle class. But it wasn't until I was 17 or 18 that I put together of like, when you had been telling me my entire childhood, we can't afford that. That was not true. You guys had plenty of money to buy whatever you wanted, but you chose not to. And then to me, like what the really defining moment, and this was just 10 years ago, I guess, 12 years ago, is when my dad retired earlier than he anticipated. And he just got burnt out at his job. He was an ER doctor, which is like crazy stressful. People dying every day in front of you. And he reached a point where he just said, I've had enough. It was too much. I'm done. And I think he quit probably 10 years earlier than he thought he would. But he could, because they had saved so much money, because they were so frugal over those years. So that was, and again, that was, I was, you know, in my late 20s, early 30s at this point, but it was like, oh, that's why you were so frugal. You have complete control over your life now. And all through my childhood, I think I viewed them, or in my teenage years, I should say, as like, my parents are so frugal. They don't know how to live. They're just misers. They save too much. But then when I was 30, I was like, ah, I get it now. I totally get it. You took control over your life and you can do whatever the hell you want to do now because you grew up saying, we can't afford it. We can't afford it. We can't afford it. And it was like, they were just taking a longer term view than I think a teenager was at the time, when my teenage brain was like, go buy a Mercedes, go buy a Porsche. And their responsible mind was like, we need to save for retirement so we can take control over our destiny.
Is this all in hindsight, or have you had this conversation with them?
I've had it with them. I think what's interesting is that this is true for their investing strategy too. I don't think they did this intentionally. I think it was just kind of in their DNA. They didn't sit down and say, we need to save X dollars so we can retire at this date, and this is the best investing strategy. I think they just did it. And Warren Buffett talks about the money mind. Some people have the money mind and some people don't. I think both my parents have the money mind. They just get it. Nobody taught them. They didn't take any courses. They just understood it. It was just intuitive to them. And it's really interesting is like, you know, before their mid 40s, my parents met on a hippie commune in the 1970s.
Of course they did.
Like as anti-investing, you know, budget conscious as you can possibly get, just the complete denial that money even exists in the world. But they kind of understood it. And I think to this day, if you look at their financial habits, they are like some of the most financially responsible people you will ever see. Some of the best investors you will ever meet, but they don't even know it. It's just, it's not intentional. It's just what seemed right to them.
That's what they do. Hey, it's Carl. You know, one thing that came up for me in this part of the conversation was just this acknowledgement and recognition of the work that Morgan and Gretchen's parents did around money. They clearly passed something on to Morgan and Gretchen. I found it fascinating that Gretchen was aware of the tension when her parents were separated and the need to be careful with money, and that it was discussed. I mean, my parents were divorced when I was 8. There was no discussion of this through no fault of anybody's, really. People were just really busy. They had a lot on their plate managing with the kids and divorce and moving. And nobody ever taught my parents how to talk about money. Just like nobody ever taught probably you how to talk about money. Most of us didn't have these experiences modeled. And in both Gretchen's home and Morgan's home, there were models and even discussions about the role that money plays in our lives. So I don't know about you, but that was a lot to think about and feels like a really good place to hit pause on this conversation, because there's so much we cover in the second half. We haven't even gotten to the part of the conversation where we talk about fighting about money as a couple. So for now, reflect on this. Did you have conversations about money with your family growing up? If you did, what's your earliest memory of that? Can you share that with a friend, a partner, or a spouse? And if you didn't have any of those conversations, like me, never, not once, what could they have been? What would you have liked to have had? And how could you change that in your life today? Maybe just reflect on that over the next week before we get to part two of this conversation with Gretchen and Morgan. I will see you then. Cheers, my friends. 50 Fires is a production of Blind Nil Audio in association with The Roost. If you find this show valuable, and I sure hope you do, please share it with a friend and leave a 6 or 7 or maybe even 8-star review over on Apple Podcasts. It's crazy how much that helps the show get introduced to more people. Speaking of more people, I have a goal that we can use 50 Fires as a spark to start 1 million conversations a month about money. I've heard from so many of you about the conversations you're having around the dinner table, on a road trip in the car, or at your favorite coffee shop, and I think we need more. So if you've got a friend or a family member that you think would benefit from having a conversation about money, or if you happen to give advice for a living, we've created a whole set of free resources. Think of it as a book club about money. It's over at 50fires.com, and you can use it every week. We're updating it every week so that you can help me start 1 million conversations a month about money. I'm looking forward to our next conversation around the fire. Cheers, my friends.
The views, information, or opinions expressed in this series are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of Chip and Joanna Gaines, Blind Nil Audio, nor Magnolia.